This is the November 10 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Brian Doherty. He's at TotalFarmMarketing.com out of West Bend, Wisconsin. Greg Johnson is with us from TGM, Total Grain Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. And John Zanker is here from Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find us online now at willag.org as usual, but there's a secondary link there for the Farm Assets Conference at farmassetsconference.com as well to get yourself registered for our November the 21st meeting. It's the kickoff for the winter meeting season for the Illinois Farm Doc team. That's the ag economist from the U of I, as well as the crop scientist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. And we hope that you will join us. Should be a great day. We're going to talk about carbon markets in the morning, along with competition from Brazil. Josh Linville will be in from StoneX to take up the price of fertilizer. We'll cover as well what's happening with the farm bill for 2023, a name you probably will recognize if you pay much attention to policy. Mary Kay Thatcher, who used to be with AFBF, the American Farm Bureau Federation, is now with Syngenta. She'll join us. And in the afternoon, we'll have a set of brokers on with us that include all graduates from the University of Illinois. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, along with Wayne Nelson, also from AgMarket.net. Ben Coons will be with us from McDonald Pells, as well as Brian Stark of the Andersons. You can find that all online at farmassetsconference.com. The cost is $80. Please do get yourself registered. Early registration ends Wednesday of next week. Now, let's take a look at what's been happening in the marketplace with our panelists here today, including, again, Brian Doherty, Greg Johnson, and John Zanker. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us. Brian, what's on your list of things that we should discuss for the day?
Yeah, so we've got three things this week. Well, we got a lot of things this week, but the USDA report, so that was front and center yesterday. Then we got a chart. We got some chart technical things that look pretty challenged on the, in particular, the corn and wheat markets, but I'll focus a little more on corn there. And then sort of the backdrop of why that may be, and that's the slower export pace we're seeing this year. It's just good to put it in sort of a numerical form to see where we are year to date compared to a year ago, and whether that trend continues, or it's just a matter of time before all of a sudden we start to see these sales erupt and pour in as world supplies remain what I'm going to call precariously tight.
John Zanker, are there things at Risk Management Commodities other than those that you're watching as well?
Well, the exports are certainly really front and center right now. But, you know, war, what's going to happen with this thing? And how soon is it going to end or not? I think it's huge. And obviously, we've seen some impacts from the export corridor being opened and then being shut and then being opened back up in a matter of days. In Brazil, setting on the potential to add 1 billion bushels over last year's soybean crop. So, you know, those things, boy, we're going to be talking a lot about those in months to come, weeks and months to come.
And finally, Greg Johnson, anything left that we ought to make sure that we cover?
We still have the rail strike. We have a little bit of a cooling off period now, but that's just around the bend. And just the overall U.S. and global economy, I think with concerns about the overall economy, that has an impact on investors, speculators' demand for commodities. So I think those two topics are worth mentioning as well.
Let's start with the rail strike, because I know we were worried about a date in November that's not very far away, November the 19th, though I take it that that has been pushed back to the month of December now, probably gives us a bit more breathing room.
That's right. I think December 9th is the date that I read as far as a new deadline. And I think what that does is it allows the unions and the railroads to try to work something out. I don't think they want to have the Congress just heavy-handedly make a determination on what they think is the right thing to do. So hopefully the two sides can get together before December 9th, because this would really have a big impact on grain movement if, in fact, they did go on strike.
And tell me how that impacts you as a grain elevator and what that means across the industry.
Basically, if we're middlemen in this operation. We buy from farmers and sell to end users. And if we can't sell it, we really don't want to buy it. Storage space is extremely tight, especially this time of year. So if that rail strike would, in fact, happen, you would see a lot of bids disappear. People would stop bidding for the nearby months. They would still bid for deferred. But the nearby bids and basis levels would probably drop dramatically if, in fact, there was a strike for more than 2 or 3 or 4 days, something more than just a nominal strike, you know, something just to get their point across and then they go back right to work. That wouldn't have a big impact. But if it lasted for a week or longer, it would have a big impact on basis and nearby prices.
And before I let you go, and because I have not driven by the elevator, in a good year, you will have somewhere between 1 and 2 million bushels on the ground. Do you have ground piles this year?
We do not. There are some ground piles in the area, but we've been fortunate enough. We had a heavy log of sales on the books, and we've been able to get trains in a timely fashion, and we just decided that it would be better to move grain rather than to store it. There is carry in the market, so it does pay to store it, but we just decided that we'd rather move it by rail if we could get the cars. We've always got the piles, the backstop. Harvest is still going on here. We have another 5 or 6 days of harvest, but it looks like we may get by without having to pile corn this year.
Brian Doherty, let's go back one day to the USDA reports released on Wednesday of this week. From that report, there were a couple of changes in yield, not big changes, and the trade seemed to take that in stride. What did you see in those reports that you liked and did not like?
Well, Todd, sometimes it's what you don't see, and what we didn't see is any significant change. So we saw some tweaking to the numbers. There was a lot of concern or fear that the USDA might take a sharp knife to the exports on corn. They didn't do that. They left them unchanged. They probably acknowledged, hey, it's early in the year. A lot can change, in particular with the dependency now on Southern Hemisphere corn. If the weather isn't just right there, we can see a mad rush to the U.S. And then the Mississippi is a big question mark as far as shipping. But as far as numbers, again, just to kind of put it in perspective in case somebody didn't hear those yet, the yield number, corn, 172.3. And that is up slightly from 171.9 in October. So that's a tweak. That's a slight uptick. Some were thinking maybe we'd see another downturn. And then there were some that thought, hey, you know, small crops get smaller. Maybe we are closer to that 170 area. That didn't happen. Put it all together, look at all the line items, basically no change to projected carry out in corn, at least not even appreciable change there, $1.182 billion. Last month, $1.172, 10 million bushels. When you're talking a number that size, that report was about as neutral, for my sake at least, as that you can get, both on the production and then the projected carry out. Leaves things tight, but it wasn't something that could feed the bulls. And the market just didn't go up on that. Had some other bigger fish to fry, probably in the form of money management and maybe movement out of corn into the equities.
John Zenker, that 0.4 of a bushel tweak in corn also showed up as 0.4 of a bushel in soybeans. That's a much bigger tweak on that side. However, the bean market on Wednesday seemed to take it in stride, and then things fell apart on Thursday. What was your assessment of the report?
Well, I think for the beans that, there's just the farmers holding on tight. We're seeing a strong bean basis. Crush is solid. Export shipments have, we're starting to turn in an October, November period like we've seen in the past. We're still a little behind, but I think there's just some momentum, or there was some momentum that kind of gotten sidetracked today here. But again, not enough of a change to really alter things. We increased the carryout from 200 million to 220 million. And I think we could probably get through December or into that December report and not see much of a tweaking there of the export number. So maybe we can keep some support there. But again, as I've mentioned to open the show, Brazil in good shape right now. if they have one of those growing seasons like we were accustomed to in the past, they could add a billion bushels. And boy, that really can, if we get to March 1st, and we're talking about another billion bushels on that Brazilian crop from this year's crop, we're not going to be probably talking about beans in the teens anymore. So we have some scary times ahead. And again, the corn exports, the USDA was generous because the early pace would suggest that we're about 340 million short of where we need to be to meet the USDA's projection. So now you're talking about a carryout potentially going to 1.5, which is going to be difficult to certainly support December 23 futures above the $6 mark.
Brian Doherty, I'll come back to you because you wanted to talk about that slow export picture, and I think you were building it through the chart and technical picture as well. What do you see there?
Sure. So year-to-date export sales using this morning's numbers, 579.9 million bushels. So 580 million bushels. Last year at this same time, 1.263. So we're 46% of where we were last year at this time. That's a pretty slow pace, and the weekly numbers continue to run at a slow pace to number 10.4. So again, if you're bullish corn at $6.75 or close to $7, we think you've got to feed the bull, and you've got to get money into the market. So when the commitment of traders report on Friday indicated close to 272,000 net long out of the managed money sector, that's a lot of position. That's as long of a position that the money managed money has held since late spring. So it leaves the market vulnerable if you don't get some friendly news of some type, or maybe no type. Sometimes it doesn't take any news for prices to start to drift or drop. But when we saw another poor export sales number today, we didn't see anything bullish on the USDA report. Prices began to slip, and we saw some big activity I mentioned a little bit earlier on today in the equities market. But really, that's been building for several weeks now with some very strong double bottom on the Dow Jones, bullish key reversals, a bullish key reversal on the S&P 500 that maybe the investors are saying, hey, look, we're sitting on this long corn and we're not getting any return on our money. Let's get into something that might give us a better return. And I would think they're pushing some more money back into the equity sides. And at least that's the way the market's moved. Then, of course, you got the election in there this week and maybe some more stalemate kind of activity in Washington versus the last 2 years. So you put it all together, pressured prices, got a weaker looking technical picture today, closed under the 200-day moving average in December. Corn closed near the low of the day, fourth consecutive lower close, that 200-day moving average. If you think about that, we're closing under the average for 200 days. That's a momentum indicator to me. You may be oversold in stochastics, but the momentum is down right now this week, and now we're at the low end, of depending on how you want to draw your channel line supports, but we're at the low end or slipped through the low end of the sideways pattern.
Greg Johnson, I want to pick up on a couple of things with you. As money flow, outside influence money, comes in and out of the market, it really is, in the end, what the grain elevator is willing to bear or the end user is willing to bear. And that may have an influence, but the market will reflect eventually what's happening at the cash level. Do you see the cash level for corn starting to break apart some?
We've started to see a little bit of pickup in farmer movement. They are finishing hard yields. Our area are much, much better than what anybody would have projected a month and a half ago. And so I think they're selling those extra bushels, and that is having a little bit of an impact on the market. But if you look at the spreads, basically, December corn is the same price next July. That's telling us that they want the grain now. So the farmers really aren't selling a lot. They're content to hold on. They're in pretty good financial shape. They don't have to sell unless they see a good price. And they tend to be pretty tight holders of corn. Now, beans, on the other hand, anytime we're over $14, we see a pickup in farmer sales at $14 cash, which would be like $14.20 futures. And we've been above that for a little while now. So we have seen farmers willing to reward the market and sell beans on this rally. But corn, they continue to be tight holders.
That would be typical of what a producer might do at this time of year, correct?
That's correct. Sometimes they're tight holders of both, but I think they look at that big potential Brazilian crop, 5.5 billion bushels, and we grow 4.5 billion bushels here in the United States. I think that, they're off to a great start in Brazil. Argentina's off to a dry start, but doesn't really matter how we start, it's how we finish. And January will be the key month. That's kind of the month when they're setting pods and filling pods. So, but if you go with the odds, they're probably going to have a decent crop. And if they are going to have a decent crop, that's a lot of beans that we have to absorb.
John Zenker, you mentioned that they could have a billion bushel more than they have in the past in Brazil. However, in South America and in general, Argentina remains in trouble. The bean crop, not particularly, because it really hasn't gone in the ground yet. But if they don't come out of the drought that they've been in with La Nina, that may cause a lot of issues, both for corn and soybeans in that particular nation, I would think. And it will be reflected in Chicago and across the globe.
Well, starting in 16, we saw a huge rally on soybeans due to some flooding, excessive rains in March in Argentina. And since then, we've moved this market pretty well at times on some short Argentine scares, and certainly last year with the Brazilian crop being down. So there's still plenty of opportunity for this market to bounce on some South American concerns. Now, just in the last 3-4 years, we've seen more crop season or growing season issues down there than we saw in the prior years. I can remember, and I'm sure the other panelists can too, and you as well, Todd, that there was years where we never got a nickel's worth of rally out of soybeans because there just was never much of a problem in Brazil. So I fear that we could be into something like that. And again, that would have a very negative impact on prices. So we need a scare. We've gotten used to scares. Mother Nature has been pretty good, not only in the southern hemisphere, western hemisphere, but up here too. She's thrown some weather problems in and saved the market more than once here over the last 2 years. How long has it been since we had 3 good years in a row as far as pricing and significant weather problems? I think it's very difficult to find that as we go back and look at the charts and from memory. So I'm a little bit worried about what happens if Argentina and Brazil go through this growing season without any significant problems.
Now, Brian Doherty mentioned the overall economy just a bit, but John, I'll have you talk a little bit about where you think the economy is headed and what impact that might have on the marketplace. And if Greg, you could follow up, and Brian, I'm sure you'll have something to add as well.
Well, I think their earnings reports in general told us that the economy could be in better shape than most people think. And then on the other hand, we're seeing, the NASDAQ has not been doing as well as the Dow, and technology, we're starting to see some layoffs there. So I think the war is the key. I think a lot of people would focus on inflation, interest rates, but I think things revolve around war. And if this war ends earlier than most people think, and that's where I am, and I don't have much agreement. I'm not sure I've talked to anybody that would agree with me on that. I think this war ends this winter, and I think initially that's bearish corn and wheat in particular, but eventually I think it's bullish the economy, and that'll eventually be more bullish commodities. So I like this economy if we can get this war ended in the next 3 to 4 months. I'm not as bullish the economy, of course, if we don't. Europe goes into recession, I think, for sure, and will eventually draw us in as well.
But before the election, this administration has demonstrated that it's basically anti-fossil fuel. They've got all kinds of regulations that they want to tax oil profits. They don't want to issue drilling rights to expand drilling. And all that has had an impact. We've got $5 diesel fuel. We've got $5 gasoline. That is a huge headwind when it comes to the overall economy. Consumers just have to spend more on that, and they have less money to spend on other things. And the election, I think a lot of people were hoping for a red tsunami that would be an indictment against the current policy, but that didn't happen. And so I guess I would assume that we're going to continue the same kind of policies, anti-fossil fuels, and we're going to continue to have relatively high prices in the energy sector, and that is a definite headwind against commodity prices in general.
It is good for renewable diesel in particular, I would suppose, and in part for ethanol, at least for a while, I would think. Is that your reading?
Yeah. Although if we're not driving as much, we don't need as much to blend. But yeah, in general, yes. The biodiesel especially, I think it's friendly, but that's just a small percentage when you compare it to the overall economy.
Think about all the variables that we've talked about here in our short period of time. We're talking about world economy, we're talking about weather, we're talking about tight supplies, we're talking about potential rail strikes, we're talking about a low Mississippi. It just goes on and on. You know, and to the point that South America for years, it was kind of a given. They had a crop and they produced a little more of a year, and all of a sudden there's some struggles producing. And so there's a couple of points I want to make is one for the producer. You know, we're looking at, well, if you have weather in South America, adding $3 to beans. If Brazil comes through and they have 54 million metric tons, 154 versus 125-ish this last year, all of a sudden the world has too many beans for at least a period of time. So you're talking a $2 or $3, you're talking a $5 to $6 swing in soybeans. The key for the producer is to look at ways to balance that. How do you balance that bullish approach? How do you balance that negative approach? And so really push a pencil to marketing, understand your marketing tools, have good conversations with your advisors and to the people who can help you, not people who coffee shop talk. But as far as just big picture economy, you know, 5-6% interest rates. We've been there before. We just haven't been there recently. The market gets used to that. It factors that in. Ultimately, I'd like to think that lower unemployment is the key. You're starting to see layoffs in the tech sector, but the tech sector is already starting to move ahead. I think the market was way ahead of these layoffs and saw it coming. So I'd probably would agree with the idea that it kind of looks darkest before dawn, that maybe we've already seen the worst behind us. And just depends what the new Congress and Senate looks like. There may be some activity there that really is more, I think, supportive to the overall economic conditions rather than the fear of what consumers have been feeling over the last 6 months.
Do you have a range for corn too?
Yeah, if you look at the December, so let's focus on old crop corn for just a few minutes there. Really challenging time lately to get through $7. The problem that I see with being overly optimistic on corn or soybeans is if we look back realistically, we had a lot of dots that were connected to give the market the big push and we had the money flow in. Right now, we're not connecting all those dots. We could, but we're not. So the likelihood of $7 plus corn or at least over $7.50, I think is pretty minimal. We've got 172 bushel yield. It's not 168. It's not 165. It's 172. We've got our hands around that to the point that was made about better than expected yield. Some very, very happy farmers this year, record yields in areas, record income, not anxious to sell, but it's sooner or later they got to sell and they'll start working the basis game a little harder once they get all their field work done. But I would probably argue that for old crop, unless there's some weather developments in the southern hemisphere, $7, $7.50 is by far a cap. I think we've got support at $6 or higher. I think back to June, how quickly the market fell apart and lost almost $2 in a matter of about 3.5 weeks. I worry about the money flow. So I've got to be a little bit more realistic. We just this week alone or last 2 weeks given up almost 50 cents of corn. So I'm going to go $6 to $7.50 in my old crop range and on my new crop range. Sky's the limit if the weather isn't good, but a realistic upside objective is $6.50. Downside objective probably closer between a range of $5 to $5.50.
John Zenker, you listened to this. Do you have some ranges you've been working with or some ideas for producers for the crop that they're still in the midst of marketing?
Well, I think those are very good ranges. I wouldn't have any disagreement with those. And that's kind of what we're working with. And I think this is a year And we say this a lot in the fall, certainly the last 2 years. And, you know, we need to protect a good, solid, profitable price. $14 cash soybeans. We started selling beans in the $14 area for the new crop last week. I wish it would have hung around a little longer, but at least we got started. We feel good about that. And I've been in this thing on the marketing side since 1985. So I've seen a lot of good things go away in a hurry. And what I learned early on was there's a difference between making a good business decision for your operation and making a great marketing decision. So if we sell beans at $14 and they go to $16, $14 was still a pretty good decision. From a business standpoint, with a good crop, we're going to make money there. And if we're still going to have some soybeans to sell, if we go to 17, there's certainly some things that we can do with the options and so on. So I think here in the next several weeks, we have to be very cognizant of the fact of the possibility, at least, that the floor could come out of this thing. If South America has a huge crop and the war ends, and, you know, fertilizer prices come down, fuel prices come down, inputs come down. We have a situation, and I'll tell you what, we're way past due for a big breakout in corn yield and soybeans here as well. So the last year big breakout in yield was 2004 for corn. So we're past due for that. Looking at the drought monitor map, you wouldn't look at that and say, wow, we're set up for a nice record yield in 2023, but the facts are, the history would suggest that we're overdue, and we have to prepare for that.
Anything to add, Greg?
Just reiterating what they're saying, 1.1 billion carryout in corn is extremely tight, and 220 million bean carryout is extremely tight, but it would only take one big South American crop to have too many beans, and a good crop here in the U.S., and a good crop out of the Brazil corn crop to have too much corn. So, focus on profits. $14 beans at 70 bushels an acre is over almost $1,000 an acre gross, and that pays the bills. And $6.75 corn at 220 bushels an acre is over almost $1,500 an acre. So we have to lock in some profits. If you want to hang on to some and you know, or buy options, that's fine. But focus on profit, and I think we can make profits at these kind of prices.
Let's get a final word from each of you, though. Greg, I think you may have given us that. Anything else to add?
No, I jumped the gun. But, yeah, focus on profits and take some risk off the table.
John Zanker, a final word from you as well?
Well, what Greg said, dittos to that. We just we have some violent ranges, violent moves here potentially, just depending upon large part what Putin does and Mother Nature. And pretty powerful forces right there that could be have a significant impact on price as we go forward.
And Brian Doherty, your final word.
Well, I'm going to give you three. Balance, balance, balance. We're talking about a lot of variables that could quickly and rapidly move prices. And when they move out of a range, generally it's pretty fast and furious. And it's akin to catching a falling knife on the way down or trying to grab a bouncing ball on the way up. Tough to do. So really think about and kind of rehearse what the future might look like. Great commentary here today by Greg and John, and what it looks like for potential. So, you know, have those critical conversations to balance things out, learn which tools you can utilize, and have good conversations to get you there. It's going to be an exciting year. It's going to be a wild ride. Let's prepare for that.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org, or look it up in your favorite podcast application, places like Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Amazon Music, Audible, Spotify, any of the other podcast applications you might use. Don't forget to sign yourself up, get yourself registered for the Farm Assets Conference. That's really soon, the Monday after next. The cost is $80. FarmAssetsConference.com for it. Our thanks go to our panelists, including Brian Doherty of Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, Wisconsin, Greg Johnson from TGM, Total Grain Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, and John Zanker of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.